Prime time is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. If Bob didn't say it, then it probably ain't true. This is Primetime Sports with a man who cannot tell a lie. Bob McCown. Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
To a primetime was on the air. Hello. Damian Cox has wandered in. Do you understand the Seattle story?
Turn your mic on. Yes, kind of.
All right.
I mean, the breakthrough seems to be that they've abandoned looking for public money, and that they're going to privately finance this. And if that's the case, there's nothing holding them back. And therefore, you might have a home, I guess, for the NHL. And I don't know if it would be a multi-use arena, are they primarily thinking NBA?
You see, I have the letter here.
Did they send it to you?
To the mayor. Edward Murray is the mayor of the fine city of Seattle, Washington. So this letter goes to Mr. Murray and to the Kings County Executive. And at the look at the top of the letterhead. What does it say? No, on the other side, top right.
It says Sonics Arena.
There is no mention of the word hockey or NHL in any of this.
Well, and. Now, that doesn't mean...
it doesn't mean anything necessarily.
But you're saying primarily they're thinking...
I don't know what they're thinking. Right. I mean, later in the program, Chris Daniels of King 5 News in Seattle will join us, and maybe he'll be able to ascertain what they actually are thinking.
I mean, if you are... Here's where I think we need to come at this from. If you are a supporter of an NHL team for Quebec City... You want to see this happen because that may be your only chance in terms of East-West.
Well, I think we established this a long time ago that Gary Bettman's plan is to add another team in the West so that he has an equal number of teams on both sides of the Mississippi River, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, now we're going to have 31.
Well, when Vegas comes in.
Right.
So, Seattle is the obvious choice. And I believe Quebec City got screwed out of their team for that reason. They're in the wrong location. They're on the wrong side of the Mississippi mm-hmm. River. Mm-hmm. Not because they're not a good city. Not because they haven't done all the right things. Not because they don't have a good enough arena. The arena's terrific, mm-hmm. by all accounts. Mm-hmm. It's because he wants another team in the West.
Well, but, and not just what he wants. It makes sense.
Well, I get that it makes sense.
Yeah.
But everything that Gary has done over the last while was on a list of priorities, including solving the Atlanta problem. Winnipeg gets their team back. Go for expansion. Hope that you get two bidders from the West. And they didn't. And, like, everything's been peck, 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 you know. We documented this years ago. The interesting part of this is, so let me read you one paragraph out of this letter. And this is this letter from, to the mayor, from the four guys who I guess are going to pony up the dough for this arena. Our goal has always been to return the NBA to Seattle and to build a new arena to make that possible. Our partnership with the city and county started 5 years ago based on the recognition that private financing of a new arena in the prevailing economic conditions was not economically feasible. The goal of this partnership was to build the arena and bring an NBA team to Seattle.
Okay.
So there are three mentions in this letter, which is about a page and a half, of the NBA, not a mention of hockey.
Well, there you go.
We've already forwarded this letter to Mr. Daly at the National Hockey League because he had not seen it and was interested in it. And so I'm curious as to whether hockey has a role here.
Well,
and remember this. There is probably a better chance of getting an NHL team right now
than an NBA team. Right. Now, the one thing I would say is, I mean, Seattle has made so much sense for so long. I mean, we've been talking about Seattle for 25 years. Why does it make so much sense? Good, pretty good pro sports city, good sports city in general, good hockey city. Had a junior team for a long time. Closeness to Vancouver.
Well supported,
so all those things have always made sense. The problem has always been the arena and, I guess, an owner, having an owner.
Yeah.
So now this comes along, and in theory you would think, well, if they build a building for the NBA, then you can put an NHL team there as a tenant or co-owned or whatever.
But truthfully, you have to plan to build an NHL arena court fits on it.
Right.
And if you go the other way, it's not as easy.
Well, you see, and that's the problem. And right now, the NHL is in the middle of a nightmare situation with Barclays in Brooklyn.
Which was built as a
NBA
basketball
arena. And the ice there is the worst in the history of ice. Like, I don't know, what is the history of ice? It goes back to, I would imagine, the Ice Age. That
it's
kind
of like the crushed ice that you get out of your blender.
No, that's better.
Okay.
And so the ice that the Islanders are being forced to play on is the worst probably in NHL history. And there is no solution in sight other than tearing up everything and putting in a new ice plant. And they're not going to do that because nobody wants to pay for it. And they're a tenant there, and they're only committed there for, I think, another 3 years or something like that. But it spells out exactly that issue. Now, in theory, if you knew you were going to get both, then you could put the proper ice plant in first. Why they have such a crappy ice plant at Barclays in Brooklyn, I don't know. So those problems are fixable, except it's also the other problems with that one, of course. It is designed for an NBA team. And there's sightline issues, and you can only put so many. So there's all kinds of
things. I lived through it in Las Vegas when they brought hockey into the Thomas and Mack Center.
Right.
It's a basketball arena, and it was doable, but it was unusual because you had the front row. If you were sitting in the front row, your knees were above the boards.
And just like now with Vegas, you don't want it. If you're ever going to get to Seattle, you don't want it to be doable.
You want it to be
We can figure out a way to cram 13,500 people in there and everything else. You want it to be really good. And it sounds like the Las Vegas arena, it's going to be really good.
So here's one of the things that I think is problematic here. Allegedly, the owner in Las Vegas paid $500 million for his team.
Yeah.
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 We have not identified this group that wrote this letter are interested in an NBA team. There's no indication that they're interested in an NHL team or that they have $500 million floating around in addition to what they've put aside for the NBA team and what they have to put aside now for the arena to get a hockey team. So you still need to find an owner. And that has always been problematic. However, are you sure Seattle would be a candidate for an expansion team?
Or a relocation.
NHL. Oh, I think the latter.
Well, and I mean, the team that continues to be
Carolina
speculated upon is Carolina. Florida looks like they're set for now. Carolina, because ownership's in flux and attendance is terrible. But they have a good young team. And they've
responded. And the university wants them out.
Yeah, and they've responded in the past, so that's the one. But all indications are that they have no plans. But that's the one. Now, of course, Quebec has their eye on Carolina as well.
Well, yeah, but they may have
to. And there would be a fee, I suggest, to a relocation
fee.
But
don't you think that, see, I'm just going to hypothesize. The NHL looks at this, realizes that the $500 million, they can't charge Seattle less than they charge Vegas. Can they? I would think not. So there's no owner there, and what $500 million
Hang on, back up. What did they charge Winnipeg?
Winnipeg was a transfer.
That's what I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about Seattle as a,
no,
as a transfer.
No. Well, I'm getting to that.
Oh, okay. I get you. No, they'll charge Seattle more.
Well, at least as much as Vegas.
Yes.
$500 million for an expansion franchise.
Yeah, they don't go backwards. They don't count. They never count down.
No.
They only count up.
Correct. So that could be problematic. Find somebody who wants a team in Seattle, is prepared to be a tenant in an arena that basically is a basketball arena.
That's the whole thing.
And that's going to be hard because you don't have revenue streams that you would otherwise have. And $500 million is a lot of money. A lot of money for a hockey team.
Yep.
So if you move Carolina,
what do you charge them?
Half. You pay $250 maybe for Carolina.
Well, and that goes back to my question. What did they charge Winnipeg?
I don't remember what Winnipeg paid for the Atlanta.
Yeah.
Flames? Yeah. No. Thrashers.
Thrashers.
Flames. Forget which Atlanta we're talking about.
That would have been great if they were the Flames, because then you could have had the Winnipeg Flames and the Calgary Flames.
Anyway, so I mean, I just think there's
issues.
Yeah, Mr. Karmanos most of the money that he got for the franchise would go back to the NHL because he owes them a crap load. Basically, the NHL's running the team, aren't they?
They've just switched over from look at this, Shannon. Shannon, he just wants to cause trouble.
Yeah, just
he sends leave
me alone.
A text. You know, what about Ottawa?
Moving.
I think that's what Mr. Shannon's suggesting. I'm putting his name to that. He may have meant that message privately. I'm putting his name on that so everybody doesn't climb down my throat.
Isn't Eugene building his arena in downtown Ottawa? Isn't that happening? Will you turn that off?
Is Shannon sending information?
I don't
care
about
him. Do you
want to
know what Winnipeg got?
No, he's gone. When he was here, he could have given information.
$170 million, he says.
What? Who did?
Yes. Oh, now you're interested.
Winnipeg
paid $170 million.
There you go.
So that's about... You know, it's getting towards half of 500.
250, you know, we're in that neighborhood.
Exactly.
John Paul Morosi of MLB Network and Fox Sports joins us now. How are you?
Is there a team in Quebec City yet?
No. And there isn't one in Seattle.
When?
Well, they want a basketball team, and we're wondering why they don't want a hockey team, and we now know kind of why, but anyway, we're just trying to connect the dots here. You know, that's what we do. How are you?
Of course, I'm doing outstanding. We're ready for game one of the World Series. And as I told my mom yesterday, something's about to happen in the next 10 days that's never happened in her lifetime and a great many of our lifetimes. So I was very excited to be, Bob, in your home state, my friend.
Well, meaning that either the loser Cleveland Indians or the loser Chicago Cubs are actually going to win.
That's right.
Yeah.
But here in Ohio, Bob, I'm all full of Midwestern and Ohio optimism. I'm in the Buckeye State, and I have not mentioned a cross word about the flagship university of your great state and their unfortunate Saturday. I've said nothing. I have said not a word.
You haven't mentioned Ohio State's bad football team yet. You haven't mentioned.
I didn't even say that name.
Exactly.
I just said that there was a game that occurred that I understand was not to. Was a suboptimal result for the.
You cannot cross the state line into Ohio and acknowledge that you are a Michigander. You can't even do that. You are hiding right now. You are hiding your identity, hiding your residence.
Let's
everything.
Out them. We're outing you. Well, we're going to tell everyone.
You want to know why? You want to know why, Bob? I'll tell you this. In all candor, I have had 3 speeding tickets in my life. 2 of them were on the Ohio Turnpike going to Indians games.
Attaboy.
Because if you have a Michigan license plate,
yep, they're going to
the
get
you. Turnpike, you might as well have a neon sign on the back of your car that says,
"Arrest me."
Free revenue. Free revenue for your state. And that happens. Whenever you're on there, if you're one mile per hour above,
yes, sir, we know that.
You're going to get flagged without doubt. Without a doubt.
Yeah, and of course it doesn't work the other way around. If you have Ohio plates and wander into Michigan, you'd have to do it by accident.
You're
but
fine.
Even if you wandered into Michigan by accident.
You have to do it by accident.
Well, you know.
And of course, Bob, right. you know the old story. you know the old story about Woody Hayes and the Alexis Road exit on the on I-75, which was the place that he filled up when he went to Michigan to recruit, and the place where he filled up when he came back.
Yeah.
He would never fill up his gas tank anywhere in Michigan.
I know.
He did not want any sort of sales tax going from his pocket to my beautiful state.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know.
Enough of you guys in your college. I got my own problems with the Fighting Irish. Bigger problems than either one of you guys got. So let's move on.
Yeah, Buckeyes will still win the Big Ten, and they'll still beat Michigan in the final week game of the season.
That always happens. Will. It's at the shoe, Bob. It's at the shoe, so they probably will.
It's over. It's over.
So here's my question before we get on to the meat and potatoes of this series, Morosi. Steve Bartman, is he going to make an appearance? Are they going to do something?
No, they're not going to do anything. Are they?
You know, Damien, that is one of the great questions that is
certainly
not so much swirling around here in Cleveland, but is in Chicago right now. And I think this, Theo Epstein and the Chicago Cubs, and especially Theo, has a certain flair for the dramatic. He comes from a family where playwrights and scripts are part of his heritage and his background. Tom Ricketts grew up the owner, of course. He is a lifelong Cub fan. And so I think they have a sense of the history. Theo has a sense for the moment. I am sure he is considering this in his own mind right now, what to do. And I am quite certain that it will be the wish of the club to have Bartman involved in some sort of a celebration or some sort
really?
Of appearance.
Irrelevant.
I think it is.
Why is that?
It's irrelevant. He ain't coming.
Because he represents what their fans have endured for a century. And I think that it will be the wish of the club for him to have some involvement, whether it's after the World Series is over, if they win, or during it, I sort of doubt. I think it's going to be after. I think it is in the event of a victory, after they win, I believe the club will reach out to him. Now, what he says.
Oh, that's no good.
Well, I agree with you. There's no evidence, JP, that Bartman has any interest in any public profile.
Well, that has been the case insofar as the Cubs have not won the World Series. If they win, I think that the story changes fundamentally in a way that we speaking today can't even probably fully comprehend. And from his standpoint, if anybody says they know what he would want to do if they win, I think that we're all just guessing. This is all just a guess. I have no idea what he will say in response to that request, but I believe based on the way the Cubs have conducted themselves in a first-class manner here, especially in recent years under Ricketts and Epstein, that I believe they would reach out. And at that point in time, it's up to him. But I do expect they will reach out if they have not already.
Yeah, I think they will reach out, and he will say thanks but no thanks, which is essentially what he's done to virtually everybody since the incident happened. And he just wants to live his life. And look, if they marched him out, I know Damian would like to see him marched out at Wrigley, throw out the first pitch in game one or game three or whatever. But the truth
of the matter, even though I've never said anything about it, Bob knows what I'm thinking.
Well, but I got that sense from what you said earlier.
I didn't
earlier.
Say anything. I asked Morosi a question. He's here.
What do you think?
We ask him questions.
I don't have to ask him questions. I
you
know
ask
I
him
think.
Questions every week. I haven't said at all anything about what I think should happen.
Well, I'm telling you what's going to happen. He ain't going to show up. They can invite him all they want. He won't show.
I don't know.
And I wouldn't either. Would you show up if you were him, Morosi?
I think if the Cubs win, I would appear at the parade or some sort of post World Series engagement.
You don't think he's going to get booed mercilessly?
He would not get booed. No,
oh, yes, he would.
Well, let Morosi say.
Bob, listen, I tell you what, a couple things. Number one, there is precedent for forgiveness. You have seen Bill Buckner, who received a thunderous ovation when he came back to Fenway as a part of the anniversary celebrations of Fenway Park. He has been forgiven by Red Sox Nation. He is now in which I'm sure you have seen, this series of commercials with Mookie Wilson, somewhat making light of the error in good humor. I don't think he could do that if the Red Sox hadn't won. But now that they did, it's changed the whole conversation around him. I think he is viewed as a sympathetic figure, and he gets great ovations, and people recognize him for the great career that he's had. And on a more fundamental level, I think any rational, and I believe, I realize rational is a loaded word when it comes to the Chicago Cubs, but I believe any rational Cubs fan, and I think that that percentage is probably growing in number now that they see, hey, we can go to the World Series if we have a team that's sufficiently good enough. Any rational Cubs fan realizes that the person that had the culpability in that inning was Alex Gonzalez, who booted the 6-4-3 double play ball that would have ended the thing and given the Cubs the lead going into the ninth inning. That was of course, he used to play in Toronto as well. But that was the key moment. It was his booted ball, not the Bartman play.
Yeah, but nobody talks about it.
They do.
Well, I mean, not in the same context.
It's the thing that, I mean, was Gonzalez ever a pariah on the level of Bartman? No.
No.
But it's the funny thing, because in the retelling of that story, it's the thing that we always say, no one ever talks about it, and yet we always talk about it. So it is something that's mentioned quite frequently, and I believe that the history's retelling of the situation has been kinder to Bartman than it is to Gonzalez, and I believe that is as it should be.
So here's how I think they should do it. Now, you suggested I wanted to throw
a
pitch.
Been waiting
I wouldn't
for
be
this.
Doing this. I think that having listened to John's smart arguments, he tends to come on here weekly and make very good,
ridiculous,
cogent,
argument.
Logical arguments.
Ridiculous.
You're being far too charitable, Damian, but go on.
Yeah, he is. He is. Yes, he is, Morosi.
I think the thing to do would be to have Theo Epstein bring him to game three and sit him right beside him. Wherever he sits, I don't know where he sits to watch the games. Just sit him beside me, and they can just leave it at that.
Well, here's
just what you don't have to recognize him. You don't have to introduce him to the crowd. People will know, and you just say,
"Well, that's interesting.
He's part of the Cubs family.
Yeah.
He's now here, and we want y'all to. He's cheering for the Cubs. We're all cheering for the Cubs. Now cheer for the Cubs." And then you don't center the guy out. You don't do any of that. You just sit him there and watch the ball game. What do you think of that?
That's a great suggestion. I think that he would probably at this stage, based on everything I know about the general landscape of the situation, my guess is he would probably still decline that. Again, just a guess.
I agree.
The whole situation, just a guess. But
his call.
That's a very fair point. But as much as we look at this and say, this is a team with great veteran leadership and great young players, neither group of whom seems to be all that concerned with 108 years of history. It's still, the history there is still very real and very tangible for the fans. And I had to smile because in the ninth inning, in game six, Carlos Ruiz, it was the ninth inning, hits that foul ball down the left field line, and it lands about 5 feet away from where Bartman had been sitting back in 2003. And it was like the same arc of a foul ball. It was basically a cousin of the foul ball that Bartman interfered with. And at that moment, there was this nervous noise from the crowd, and I was sitting in the press box. There was outright laughter in the press box. Because he just couldn't believe it. We didn't know how else to react. Everybody just started cracking up. Like, are you serious? I mean, it was that moment where I think we all thought, like, I see what you did there, God. You're watching down on this and sort of playing with our emotions a little bit. It was unbelievable. There had to have been some sort of influence on this for that ball to land exactly in that spot. It was just incredible. And so I mention this because that laughter, there is still that certain part of, as great as the team is playing right now, clearly we haven't let go of the history. We, meaning all of us who love baseball and understand what's occurred with this franchise over 108 years. And so that's very much a present feeling here. And I do wonder, guys, if maybe on a certain level, it might not actually be the worst thing that the Cubs are opening this World Series on the road. Because I think they're not confronted as much with the ghosts and the full mystique of it. They won on Saturday. They sort of were hungover on Sunday. They traveled yesterday, and they play a game today. I think actually that's not a bad way to break things up and to get back into the rhythm of playing, where, of course, the Indians have been sitting for almost a week, and the history has shown since 2009 the team with the shorter layoff has won the World Series every single time. So that's worth pointing out, and one more perhaps advantage for the Chicago Cubs.
About 10 minutes ago when you started that oration, you made mention of the fact that...
That's from you, by the way, Bob, but go on.
Oh, you're telling me. You made mention of the suggestion that Cubs players don't care about the curse, the history, Bartman, any of that stuff. And I think that's really valid. One of the things that I've learned over the years is that athletes, most of whom are in their, in their 20s, have absolutely no sense, understanding, or caring about the things that fans think about, and especially Cubs fans have been thinking about. Generation after generation without seeing a world championship. And here are a bunch of 20-year-olds from all over the U.S. And around the world, and they don't care. That's not their life. That they don't care about. They care about this team, this year, right now, beat Cleveland. That's it.
Exactly. That's a great point, Bob. And that is something I have sensed from this group. You see the way that, again, you're a young player. You're Javi Baez. You're 22, 23 years old from Puerto Rico. Bartman, the Billy Goat. That all means nothing to you. Now,
nothing.
I want to make the point, too, that I should make clear as well. I think, actually, modern players that we see in baseball do a very good job of sort of discarding that negative stuff and embrace when they have the opportunity, especially in baseball, and I can speak for baseball because that's the sport I'm around, when they see their legends in spring training or when Billy Williams comes back around the Cubs, and when Pedro Martinez is around the Boston Red Sox in spring training, there's a reverence for the legends of the game and their favorite players or names they know from the past. I think in that respect, baseball players from all around the world know the greats, especially from their own country. So they have that reverence for the history of the players in that regard. But I agree with you. From the standpoint of the negative stuff, these athletes, their mentality is so unique, at least the great ones are, that anything that basically runs counter to their performance is just expunged from their memory bank entirely.
Yeah, totally dismissed.
And they focus entirely on the things that can help them.
Yeah, but I mean, you're not doing, and I mean, we've ended up talking about Bartman for a lot longer than we should probably, but anything you're doing, you do with him, you're not doing it for the players. You're doing it for the franchise. You're doing it for the fans. You're doing it for the overall feeling of the franchise to the city, to the culture of the Cubs. I mean, I think the culture of the lovable Cubs demands that you embrace this guy who's been cast as a villain.
I think if they march him out in the field, he gets booed. But I may be
I didn't
wrong.
Say march him out in the field.
Oh, I think he'd get cheered, Bob. I really do.
Maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, and remember, they are so giddy. I mean, they are so giddy right now over how this team has played, what happened on Saturday. Remember, the Boston Red Sox had their own curse, 86 years. But at least they got to the World Series in 86, in 75, in 67. I mean, the Cubs, the vast majority of people in that ballpark had never even seen them make it this far, ever.
No, 1945.
So Cubs fans, now certainly they're getting greedy now because they should, because they're four wins away from the ultimate prize. But they were, for a long time, just saying, just get us to a World Series. Just get us there. I just want to see a World Series game. That's going to happen here just in a few days.
We got to go. Who do you like in the series before we bid you fond adieu?
Cubs in seven. They're the better team, and it will not be easy. So I'm saying seven games for the Cubs. Should be a great one.
So that you know what that is? That's the pick that we say, because I don't want all the Cleveland fans to be mad at me. So I'm going to say it in seven.
Yeah.
You know, come on, Morosi.
I'm telling you what I feel, Dave.
No, I'm telling you exactly why you picked that number.
I'm just saying, I think it's going to be a hard series. The Cubs win it in seven, and the Canadians are not going to lose a game all year. How about that?
Well, the Michigander has lost his mind in the state of Ohio, and so we'll let him try and find it.
Good luck with those tickets.
Morosi?
I'm off on the search, guys. Thank you.
And hide the blue jacket with the gold lettering. All right?
I will. I shall sing No Fight Song. The victors will not be sung by me this entire week, I promise.
You are a chicken, if nothing else. John Paul Morosi of the MLB Network and Fox Sports. When we come back, very tall guy. Pascal Siakam will join us. Power forward, Toronto Raptors. Maybe a starting power forward.
How about that, eh? First round pick.
He was here after he got drafted. And couldn't fit under the desk.
He told us.
So
he
we
told
got
us.
We got a new desk.
He says, I'm going to play. I'm going to play. We looked at him. He said, no, you're not going to play.
Well, he's playing.
He's playing.
We'll see how he's playing, how he likes it, what it's been like. When Primetime continues in a moment.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Lido missed the boat that day. He left the shack. But that was all he missed. And he ain't coming back.
Bar and a joint car. 22 minutes before the hour, Primetime continues. Bob McCowan, Damian Cox in our Toronto studios. Later, Jeff Merrick. And Chris Daniels of King 5 News Seattle will talk about this Seattle arena deal. It's for an NBA team, but is it also for an NHL team? And where does that go? If you've been paying attention to this program just a few weeks ago, we got a new desk put in here. The reason we got a new desk put in here is his fault.
Not me, him.
Him. Pascal Siakam is a power forward with the Toronto Raptors. He came here right out of school and after he got drafted, and he came into the studio, and we had this desk for Billy Barty for short people.
And he complained.
He complained about it. And so we raised the desk, and we had to invite you back. It's the only reason we invited you back, by the way. I want you to know. I mean, it's better, though, huh?
It's better. I feel great right now.
You almost feel short now, don't you?
Yeah, like I feel awesome. I don't have to like worry about my feet. It's awesome. Great job, guys.
You're welcome. I was thinking about the Sullinger injury, which has created some opportunities for you, and how that evolves remains to be seen, but... You know, the interesting thing about it was he gets hurt right at the beginning of the games, first game, right? And that has now given you court time, awareness, the ability to assimilate a little easier. You've gotten more time, you have more playing time than you probably would have gotten if he was there, because he was a first-year guy with the Raptors. He had to assimilate the systems and everything else. Have you thought about that? I mean, you don't wish that on anybody, but it's given you an opportunity to kind of ease your way into it a little bit better.
I mean, first of all, I want to say, I mean, Sullinger has been awesome to me, you know, since I got here. And he's a great guy, great veteran. Like, he knows the game. And he's been really taking me under his wings, like, since I got here. And teaching me little stuff and talking to me. So it's been, I mean, I feel really bad, you know, him going down like that and at the beginning of the season. I mean, we definitely need him, you know, on the team and everything. So I hope he's going to come back soon. I know he's going to come back, you know, and even stronger. But as far as me, like, I mean, it gives opportunity, like you said, you know, now is a spot to fill in and like, you know, we probably sometimes hate to say it. I mean, it's the next man up, you know, we have to.
Yep.
We have to worry about, works. You know, what to do now. I'm excited. I mean, as a young player coming in, you know, all you want to do is play, you know, you want to play basketball. And if you get that opportunity to play the game that you love, you know, you just want to give everything you have. So that's all I'm going to do.
Well, and you know, when we see the NBA and we all watch the NBA, and you, every night you see there's all the guys, and then there's a few guys at the end who don't get to play, you know, coach's decision, or they're not even in uniform, they're in suits. And that happens to you're a late second round pick. That's often what happens to late second round picks in their first year, second year. But you came here when you visited with us and you said, I'm gonna play. And you're going to get to play. You may start. I mean, are you surprised? I guess not, because you predicted this is how it was going to go. You've had that much confidence in yourself.
I mean, yeah. I mean, because you hate to say you're surprised, because you put so much work into what you do, you know. But you have to be honest, too, because, you know, you have two veteran players in front of you at your position, you know. So it's not evident that you're going to play. But at the same time, you have that drive and that edge that, hey, man, I'm working hard. I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. I'm going to get my opportunity. I'm going to play. I don't know when it's going to be, but I know I'm going to play. I'm not here to just be there, you know, and watch people play. I want to play. So I always had that. But, you know, I mean, it's definitely – I wasn't expecting to be in this position right now. I mean, I knew I did everything to be able to play, but I didn't know, like, I was going to – now it's like, okay, it's sure that you're going to play. Like, it's Now it's whether or when are you going to play or when are you going to get into the game. So that's definitely something different. But my mindset is the same, man. It's the same thing. You know, I always worked to be able to play. And now that I get my opportunity, I just have to take advantage of it.
We all know that there's a transition to be made from college basketball to pro basketball and or college sports in general to pro sports. But you were saying that you were a little surprised that practices weren't harder. College practices a little longer, a little more intense than what you get at the NBA. There's other things to worry about.
Yeah.
But once you're on the court, have you assimilated the offense? Was it easy to understand what Coach Casey wants you to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty much like it's pretty clear what they want me to do. I mean, I think they don't expect 20 points from me. They don't expect that from me. I mean, you have people that can score the basketball. So like, to me, it's like I have these things I have to worry about, and I have to focus on that. And those are the only thing I focus about. You know, like, I mean, I'm gonna run the floor. I'm gonna play defense. I'm gonna you know, bring the energy. I'm gonna do all those things.
Well, they want you to get some boards too.
Yeah, get big rebounds, blocks. You know, so things like that. That's what, you know, the team wants me to do. So I'm just gonna do that. And it's gonna be interesting to see. But I don't really have any pressure like that. You know, because I know exactly what the coach wants me to do. I talked about plays. I mean, it's new. Everything is new. Like, it's a new system. Like, I never ran this play before. You know, so it's going to be an adjustment point. Like, you know, I have to learn. I have to spend extra time, you know, after practice, talking to coaches and asking them, you know, taking the playbook and reading it and going over it, because now you have to know these players because all the other guys know it. You know, you have to catch up. So I know that, and I'm always being, you know, ahead and trying to work hard and trying to get there to that moment where I don't have to think about a play. I already know it, you know. So it's going to be an adjustment, but I think I'll be ready.
So you're getting used to life in the NBA, and you're getting used to life in Toronto. You love the fact that it's getting cold, we know, and you're going to enjoy that all winter long. And you've got your brother.
No, he doesn't.
You got your brother Christian here. I don't know if we can get a camera on. He's out there.
Yeah.
He's hanging out there. But anyways, and he's here to help you.
Yeah.
What, your parents tell him, get up there and help your brother. I mean, how did that work out? And how's Christian helping you adjust to life in Toronto?
Oh, I mean, nah. First of all, my parents didn't do that, you know. He's awesome, man. Like, I have three brothers, and, you know, they've really so helpful to be, you know, going through this. I have two sisters, too. But my brothers, they know basketball. So, like, they're more involved in that point because they know the game of basketball. They played before. And it's new to all of us, you know, because nobody played in the NBA before. But at the same time, they know basketball. And I think, you know, he made, you know, an amazing sacrifice, you know, to come out here with me and just leave whatever he was doing and be like, I'm going to come with him. I'm going to help him out during this process. And especially now where, you know, I'm this college kid, like, that's going to be in the NBA now, you know, he's been really helpful, you know, just, you know, taking me to places sometimes where I want to be and just like being there, being that support, because it's a long season. It's going to be ups and downs, and having that family and that person, you know, like, you can talk to. I think it's really awesome, and I'm so happy that he's here. He makes things like really easy for me.
So now here you are, raw rookie coming into the NBA with a bunch of guys who went to the conference championship last year. I mean, these are players with whom you're at least there. You know their names.
Yeah.
When you stepped on the court for the first few times, who's the guy that made you say, "Wow, he's really good"? Was there one guy that that really impressed you? It doesn't have to be the best player necessarily, but.
I don't think I got to that point yet because, I mean, the preseason, I mean, some of the guys played, but, like, not everyone played. And it's preseason, you know, everybody kind of relaxed.
Kind of on cruise control.
You know? So it's, but because people always ask me, it's like, oh, has he hit you yet? You know, you're in the NBA now. Like, and I always say, like, nah, man, like, I don't get it. You know, I'm still there, but, like, I don't really feel it. But I think it was Calgary, we played Golden State. As soon as I got in the game, I was guarding Kevin Durant. And that was like the first possession. And I'm like, okay, this is real. Like, you know, like, I'm actually here now. You know, I can feel it. You know, this is guys that you look up to and you watch on TV and you've been watching in college and everything. So it's like, man, like, I'm really here.
Now,
man.
So he's playing at something less than 100%.
Yeah.
But were you Were you astounded by what he was able to do and how he was able to move? I mean, or was it just kind of natural for you?
It was kind of natural, but I mean, I'm always, you know, because the things that he's done, like, and I saw, you know, I've seen him play in playoffs and do all mm-hmm. those things. Like, I know that.
Yeah.
I know the level he can play at, you know, and it's like, I know that, but I don't think, like, during the game, I didn't see anything too crazy, but I know he's, like, he's a great player, so, like... I don't think it happened because it's preseason. You know, I can't really tell.
Yeah, yeah.
One of these days, you know, when the game
maybe tomorrow
we'll see. You know what really happens. You know, so but I'm just excited though.
Did he say anything to you?
No, it was quiet, man. Like I didn't say anything. He didn't say anything. I was just playing hard.
Because you could have got right up in his grill and started talking to him.
I mean, I didn't talk to him, but I was excited to guard him because it's Kevin Durant. It's one of the big ones, you know, so it's always exciting to guard one of those people.
Do you feel like that's how they're going to use you a little bit to play defense?
Yeah, I mean, that's my main focus right now. You know, my main focus is playing defense. That's the only way I'm going to get on the court because they don't expect me to score, you know, and for now, my way to establish myself into the rotation and get some minutes is going to be by being able to play right. defense, be able to guard multiple positions, be able to switch from one to four. Like, that's what's going to, you know, be the coaches like, oh, I have to put him on the court because he's one of the only guys that we have that can do that, you know.
Right.
So that's going to help me.
We asked you before your expectations, and you didn't really seem to have specific idea of what you wanted to accomplish in your first year. Have you thought more about it? Do you now have a better sense of what you'd like to do? Is it as simple as being with this team throughout the year, or are your ambitions higher than that?
Right now, man, like that's what I'm saying. I hate to get ahead of myself. Like, I hate that. I always want to, like, live for the moment and do everything, you know, I'm supposed to do. Like, I'm going to work hard, and that's something people know about me. And, like, my thing is, like, as long as I do that, everything else will take care of itself. You know,
what's Coach Casey like? I mean, we know him as coach, and he's on here all the time during
the
season.
But some coaches don't talk to the rookies.
I mean, what's he been like to you?
He's been great, actually. I mean, he's on me. Like, I mean, I'm not saying he's nice to me.
He likes defense.
Yeah, he loves defense. And, like, and when we play, he's always on me. And the thing is that makes me feel, you know, good is because, like, he wants me to be great. He wants me to be good. Like,
right.
If I make a mistake, it's going to be on me. That means that, you know, he knows that I have potential and he wants me to, you know, to succeed, you know. And I love that about him. You know, the fact that he's going to be on me, he's going to tell me what I'm doing wrong, and he's going to be there consistently. Every move that I make, he's going to be like, if I do something wrong, you'd be like, yeah, you're supposed to do that. And I like that.
So I said to you, you may start. I know we only have a second.
Yeah,
I've
got a minute
here. You may start. But, I mean, the game's tomorrow. You still don't know if you're starting tomorrow.
Yeah, I have no idea. You guys have to ask Coach Casey.
We got to find out for him. Bob.
Yeah, I don't know. You have to talk to Coach Casey. Probably let me know. I don't know. Talk to Matt or anybody. Like,
We'll call your brother.
All right, cool.
We'll call Christian.
Because you'll be busy. He ain't doing anything else. Christian's out there reading the newspaper. We'll call him. We'll give him a shout, and he'll tell you. All right?
Yeah.
And if we can't get it from Casey, Masai's on tomorrow night.
We'll ask Masai. I don't think Masai even knows.
He'll talk to Casey. Casey will tell Masai. Masai will tell us. We'll tell your brother, and your brother will tell you.
That's a great chain right
there.
Done.
Holy mackerel, what a mess. Technology at its finest, ladies and gentlemen. It's good to see you again. And we're excited for the success that you've had in the preseason, the amount of time you've got a chance to play.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very much looking forward to seeing you in action. It's going to be a long process. It always is. This is the NBA. It takes time. But we're optimistic about your future, and we wish you good luck.
Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate it, first of all. You know, I know you guys don't really have players come in here.
We don't very often.
So I feel blessed. I feel, you know, special.
You're our new favorite.
And I really appreciate it. And you know, thank you guys for having me.
Just when you become an NBA All-Star, don't forget about Bob and Damian.
never, man, never.
Pascal Siakam is the power forward for the Toronto Raptors, a rookie, and he will we anticipate we'll get his first real NBA action when they crank it up tomorrow night in the season opener for the Raptors. Jeff Merrick of the NHL on Sportsnet. Chris Daniels from King News in Seattle, where they're talking about an arena, but is it for basketball or hockey and basketball? We'll address all that in the next hour here on Primetime.